This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome back in. It's another hour of the Lombardi Line presented by BetMGM. I'm Ben Wilson in for Stormy Bonatoni today. Great to be back with Michael Lombardi from his office setup there on the East Coast. I'm here in Vegas at our Circus Sportsbook studios. Big thanks to Elliot Bowman, our producer behind the glass. Time for a fun little exercise, though, Michael. I mean, we're into that time of year. I saw some of the talk shows this morning talking about Justin Fields being an MVP candidate. So you know it's that time of year. You said it earlier today when we get into our NFL topics.
Where do you come up with that? What do you come up with? I mean, like, what game should I watch that tells me you can – I mean, if you're – in fairness to Justin Fields, if you could just get efficient throwing the ball – that's a giant – like, why do we have to go from being really a horrible thrower of the football to the MVP? Like, isn't there any in between? Like, how about some gradual progression? How about being able to do something really well? How about not fumbling 28 times in 2 years? Mm-hmm. How about not getting sacked 91 times in 2 years? How about not averaging 7 yards a sack? You know, how about not – you know, throwing the ball 22 times in games when you were blown out most of the year. Like, seriously, like, where is the gradual ability to – why put all – like, he has to go from being a really below-average passer of the football to the MVP? Like, when does that happen? Like, when – like, we're not back in the Hollywood where we're going to find a superstar in a drugstore. Like, it's got to be a gradual point here.
Yep, but we are required, apparently, as members of the media, to make these grandiose
statements. No, we got some idiot out there. We got some idiot out there screaming about it with no evidence behind it. I mean, there's no evidence. I mean, you can't go turn on a tape and say, okay, yeah, here we go. I got this.
I know.
The Bears are praying that he can. They're not sure. Like, just let the kid get better at something. Like, why does he have to become the MVP? It's the dumbest bet of all.
Exactly. It is. But what we are going to try to do, we'll at least try to find something actionable for the bettors out there today. I knew you would appreciate that though. We're calling it better or worse. And you and Femi Abebefe did the exercise over the weekend. So you're talking about the teams that missed the playoffs last year that are favored this season. And it's a storyline that will get repeated a bunch as we get towards training camps, how there is so much turnover. You usually see 4 or 5 teams every single season that made the playoffs miss the next year. So we're going to look today at the teams who made the playoffs last year and who are underdogs to get back this year, favored to miss. And I have to think, Michael, a big talking point as we get towards training camp on the LA Chargers is going to be, wow, how could you ever come back from the blown lead in Jacksonville in the wild card game? That's going to be that tired trope thrown out there. Oh, they're definitely going to have that as a hangover coming into this year. A 10-7 team from last year. But what do you realistically expect to see out of the Chargers with all the issues they had defensively? How much can we expect them to get better on that side of the ball as a team right now, even money to make the playoffs, minus 120 to miss?
Well, I mean, I think that's the fundamental question, right? I mean, they won 10 games last year, right? You know, and their defense wasn't very good. I think they struggled. You know, they were the worst team yards per attempt in rushing defense. You know, they had a hard time stopping teams from running the football. Did they do, you know, they so naturally, when you can't stop the run, what would be the first thing you do if you can't stop the run? Sign a receiver, draft a receiver. It makes perfect sense to me. Why wouldn't we do that?
Yeah,
let's get a receiver. That's what we need, which I'm not saying they don't need a receiver, because last year with DeAndre Carter had to come in and play, with Keenan Allen's injury and Mike Williams, it kind of hurt them. But to me, like, they can't stop the run. And here's the other fact. They can't run the ball. Like, they averaged 30 yards. And so they brought in my man joystick, Kellen Moore, doesn't call runs. I mean, they were 28th in rushing attempts last year, right? So Joe Lombardi didn't call runs. They were 30th in yards. They didn't gain yards, right? And so now they're 30th, you know, in 30th yards per attempt. So they really didn't do anything. So to me, they never get control of the game because they can't stop the run, nor can they run the ball. I know this. Running the ball means getting field goals, right? I get that. I understand that. But there's a way to pace a game by running the ball. I'm not saying go out there and establish the run. I want to establish the lead. But I also want to be able to control the game.
Chargers were not able to do that when they had the ability to run out the clock in the AFC wildcard game. And that'll be, again, the big talking point coming up. Eric Kendricks was the big addition, at least on the defensive side from Minnesota.
Huge addition.
That will help out in a big way.
Put a receiver in it, Will, linebacker. That'll help too.
I
think the draft is a reflection of understanding team building. And I think, you know, and who really can help you. Now, in fairness to them, you know, maybe there wasn't a defensive lineman or somebody to help in their front seven. But to me, if they don't stop the run, you know, that's always about they can't get control of the game.
And, you'll see now where will the Eric Kendricks addition factor in, because he now leaves Minnesota, who is the next team on our list. And we mentioned them in the Step Into My Office segment from earlier today, with Kirk Cousins now into his final year, that three-year deal. Plus 110 to make the playoffs, minus 130. I just pulled up my end-of-season power ratings, Michael, and of the 12 teams in wildcard weekend last year, I had the Vikings power rated 11th. And you're going to hear the refrain a lot of, you win, one-score games, you're destined to take a huge step back. Will that actually come to fruition this season now, as the odds certainly believe it will, and they will regress to a degree where they're outside the playoff picture?
Well, I mean, look, the Ed Donatell, they got rid of Ed Donatell, so that really, you know, that affected them. You know, did they, you know, when going into the draft, you felt like they needed to get some corner help, right? They needed to get corner help. They needed to get defensive line help. Can they do that? I think those are the things. But the problem is they're really stuck on the fact that they don't have cap room. Now, they signed Dean Lowry to help in the defensive line. They've signed Marcus Davenport. That try to help them in the defensive line. But can they get there? They signed Byron Murphy to help at corner. So, you know, they understand their needs, but are they going to be good enough? Can those guys come in and deliver for them? I think that remains to be seen. And they were in so many close games that they were fortunate enough to win them, and they found a way to win them. So, for me, I don't know if you can duplicate that magic again. And if they get rid of Cook, I think Matheson's a really good player, but Cook's a special guy too. You know, and Jefferson is an elite player at the receiving core. I thought Thielen was towards the end of his career, and he wasn't the same guy. So I think when you break down this team, there's a lot of question marks, and a lot of it still stems from, are they good enough up front? You know, because with Cousins, if you don't protect him well enough, that's a problem.
It was a team that did grade out 22nd in the run block win rate, 23rd in pass block. It was toward the bottom 10 of the league in that regard for a good amount of the year. And I think a lot of people will wonder, Brian Flores, big name coming in as a defensive coordinator. The struggles of the defense under Ed Donatell, well documented. Can that be enough, Michael, to counteract that perceived regression that we're all talking about here with Minnesota?
Yeah, I think what will happen with Minnesota is Flores will scale down what they want to do. I think they'll get better at one or two things, and they're going to rely on the offense to play from in front, which they can do. I mean, they can move the football effectively, but, you know, they're going to have to prove that they can do that, right? And Cousins has got to be able to play consistently within the framework of what they do, and not always kind of, if he gets hit early in the game, oh, no, we're in trouble. So I think they'll be better defensively, because they won't be all over the place in terms of trying to plug holes.
As far as the team the Vikings lost to in last year's playoff game, it's another team that made the postseason, made it to the divisional round before being waxed by Philadelphia, and is a dog to get back there to the postseason this time around, Michael. New York Giants, it's a classic case, right, of the numbers community. You look at all the, you know, like even just the basic stats, right? I mean, yards per play, bottom 10 offense and defense, but it didn't matter. Brian Daboll was able to scheme situations for them to find success, win 9 games, make the postseason. Here they are, plus 145 to make the playoffs now in coming in here to 2023.
Yeah, I mean, and look, let's be honest here. I mean, can they duplicate what they did last year? I thought that Brian deserves a ton of credit for what he was able to do in terms of managing the game. But can he do it? Look, with the second half of the season, let's be clear. They come back, they play Houston. Houston's never punts in the second half. They turn it over. They lose to Detroit. They get beat by Dallas. You know, they tie Washington in overtime. Philly blows them out, right? Then they beat Washington. They had that kind of really good start of the season. They beat a Bears team. They beat the Packers. You know, great win for them against Baltimore, and a win against Jacksonville that kind of seemed improbable, but they got it done. But then at the end of the year, I mean, their two wins at the end of the season are against the Washington Commanders and against the Indianapolis Colts, and then they beat Minnesota in a playoff game. So, like, I think this team has got a chance to they're good, They got a long way to go. I mean, they have a long way to go. I think when you break them down, they were very effective in game situations. They were one of the best red zone teams offensively, mm-hmm. seventh in the league. They're one of the best red zone defensive teams, fifth in the league. They were the fifth best third down team in the league. Can they stop the run? No, but they get off the field on third down, which is critical. So for me, they haven't come close to beating Dallas or Philly, and that's who they have to beat to get in.
Right. Well, and we just had the discussion on the Chargers, and when you can't stop the run, how that puts you behind the eight ball. Giants really couldn't either. Finished the year 30th rush DVOA defense. We're last in the league the final 6 weeks of the season. How much do you believe that the signing of Bobby Okereke coming over from Indianapolis, where he was part of that top 12 run defense group, will really impact the Giants this year?
Well, I think it'll help, certainly, because they had no linebackers. I mean, they were playing Jalen Smith in there at linebacker, and poor guy's playing on one leg. So, you know, that's got to help them a little bit. But I think, to me, the bigger question is, can Daniel Jones make a play down the field? See, here's the thing. They manage Daniel Jones really effectively. But once they start to move him outside of his comfort zone, he averaged 6.9 yards per attempt. They didn't throw the ball down the field. You know, so Jalen Hyatt they draft will give him an outside vertical presence. Can Jones get the ball to him? You know, Darren Waller, can he stay healthy? I think that's the question. Can, if they play outside of their comfort zone, which was very, mm-hmm. very conservative, run the ball, play action. You know, I mean, they were number one in the league in not throwing interceptions. They were 25th in the league in yard and passing attempts. So they didn't want to throw the ball much. They wanted to kind of manage the game, slow the game down. They're 24th in yards. I mean, I'm not making these numbers up. I mean, they protected the ball. They were second in the league in turnovers. If that shifts just a little bit, they're going to win seven games, not nine.
And right, and also the health of Saquon Barkley, as we talked about earlier. What will his contract situation look like when we get toward the training camp set part of the season? And can he stay healthy after finally only missing one game? It was the healthiest season he'd been since a rookie. A lot of questions there for the Giants heading into 2023. We'll have more NFL headlines a little bit later on in the show. But up next, college football win totals are now out, Michael, and Michael Calabrese. Uh-oh. He is set to join us. We have some interesting topics to get to on the CFB front next on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Before you make your next bet, be sure to visit VSiN.com to check the current betting splits data. Want to know where the money and bets are moving every game? The betting splits page is updated with DraftKings odds every 10 minutes, so you can see changes in all the action. Find out where the public is betting based on the number of tickets and where the money doesn't match the public opinion. You can check out not only today's action, but future events as well. Betting splits are another way VSiN is here to make you a smarter, better year-round. Check out today's betting splits for every game at VSiN.com. Back with Michael Lombardi. I'm Ben Wilson in for Stormy today. Doing a great job. Stormy is on the Follow the Money crew. And I believe Dave Ross will be in tomorrow here as we get our midweek Lombardi Line content for you as well. Excited to talk some college football. Michael, it's that time. Win totals are now available. Pretty widely available now for some of these college football teams. So let's bring in Michael Calabrese, who joins us at college football content for Action Network. Always great to see Michael. You know, and I can't remember another year. And I know you're a Colorado guy, but when a team that had a win total of 3 was like the talk of college football betting, it's pretty crazy, but it's the Deion Sanders effect as a new head coach. What are we supposed to do now with this win total of 3 that it seems like everybody wants to talk about the Buffs, Michael, more so than they want to talk about Alabama or Georgia heading into this season?
So you start talking at 3, you quickly move to 76 because they only have 76 guys officially on the roster at this point. 12 returning scholarship players, 21 incoming transfers, 17 freshmen, and 26 walk-ons. Now, that doesn't include the 17 transfers that are going to come, you know, during this next window that have already agreed to sign on with the Buffs. But what's interesting is that when the number came out initially, when Deion signed on, a lot of books had it 5, 5.5. And that was the right in the wake of him saying that he was bringing his luggage. It was going to be Louis. There was going to be 5-star kids signing left and right. But at this point, what I think is interesting is there's now value with the number moving down to 3, and you can get over at even money. And the way I look at it is, yes, they need to bring in probably 20 more guys, but there's over 300 scholarship or former scholarship players still in the portal at this point. That doesn't necessarily mean that these guys are the creme de la creme and they're going to be game breakers, but it does allow them to add into their 2 deep to at least be competitive. And then when you break it down into their schedule, searching for those three or four wins. In my opinion, they have six winnable games. They're home against Nebraska in the first year under Rule. That would be a very difficult game to win, but I still think it's on the table. Then the next week, home against Colorado State at Arizona State, also in year one of a new head coach. Home against Stanford, year one of a new head coach. Home against Arizona and finishing the season at Washington State. I think there's three wins out there, so I'm going to go ahead and take the value at even money and hope that they can pull an upset, whether it's against Nebraska, Arizona State, or Wazoo.
Michael, are you concerned a little bit that some of the kids that they've already signed are now transferring back out? That doesn't spell like people are integrated into the program.
Oh, I don't think they're integrated into the program at all. I think this is an absolute mess at this point. But the thing about it is that you have organized chaos under Sanders. The way that he's managed this entire process, he let people know up front, we're going to turn over the entire roster. That initial, you know, team meeting that he had, he was very clear and upfront about it. And I do think it makes their fall camp more important and, you know, newsworthy than any other in the entire country. I'm going to be following that very closely. But as I said, I think the value right now is to go over. It is going to be chaotic, but as I mentioned, there's first-year head coaches in the Pac-12. There's first-year head coaches in the non-conference schedule for Colorado as well. So a lot of teams, just not at the same degree, are dealing with this discombobulation and how they're going to fit all these jigsaw puzzle pieces together. So I do think a lot of teams are actually kind of going through the same, you know, painful, you know, baby steps. And Colorado is just one that's doing it in a very extreme way.
Again, this is the Lombardi Line. We're talking some college football win totals right now with Michael Calabrese from the Action Network. Follow him at East Breeze there on Twitter. And we had I remember having a discussion all off season last year, Michael, and I see a Georgia helmet behind you there at your home setup. It was, all right, Georgia lost all these pieces to the draft. No way they can possibly repeat or be that good. How they run the table, win the national title. Are we going to have the same conversations again this year? They're sitting at 11.5 on the win total. It is, and it's juiced to the under, minus 150. Is that a real narrative that's going to take hold once again?
It's interesting because historically, when you look at a number that's priced between 11 and 12 on the regular season wins, you're looking at an established team that's either one or two in the preseason poll, has, you know, a ton of, you know, fresh faces that are coming in to help a main core, usually boosted by a quarterback. But this year, losing, you know, their quarterback, having Carson Beck, who looks like he's going to take the reins, to me, that kind of signals at least one stumble throughout the regular season. But then when you go down their schedule, there's only three losable regular season games, in my opinion. This is kind of a downy soft schedule for the Bulldogs. Home against South Carolina on September 16th. Then you got to go all the way into the month of November, hosting Ole Miss. And then it really comes down to going to Knoxville and playing against Tennessee on November 18th. Outside of that, they're going to be a two-touchdown North favorite in every other game that they play. And I understand they're 80th in returning production, according to Bill Conley and ESPN's numbers. But this is a team that's replacing with 4 and 5 starters at every position. So it's not quite a pass for me. If I were to play it, I'd go under the 11.5 just because it's a tall task to ask for a team to run the table with that bullseye on their chest. As Nick Saban likes to say, they're going to be fed rat poison throughout the entire season from the media. It's three-peat time. They're going to go down as the greatest program of all time. That's a lot of pressure for an offense that has some new pieces and a defense that's replacing a lot in the front seven.
All right, you talked about Nick Saban in Alabama. Who is going to be the starting quarterback at Alabama? A lot of talk after the spring game that, you know, they maybe didn't have a quarterback. Would they go with a freshman? You know, Milroe wasn't exactly dominating. Simpson, the redshirt freshman, didn't shine. Buckner was another kid that they maybe is transfer. Who do you think becomes the starting quarterback at Alabama?
I think for my money, it's going to be Milroe. And I think an element of spring football is that you're not really allowed to use your wheels as a quarterback as much as you would in a regular season or postseason game, just because of the way they want to protect them, wearing different color jerseys at different points, you know, blowing plays dead. And that's his game-breaking elements. Obviously, we saw it last year against Arkansas, his long touchdown run. And the offense, they would have to switch around some of the play-calling components to be able to feature him prominently. I do think he's going to end up winning it. But I think what actually plays out is more akin to that 2016 season where you had Jalen Hurts coming in off the bench early in the season and then taking over the starting role. Saban hasn't shied away from that idea of playing multiple quarterbacks early in the year. And I think it kind of plays into his overall narrative that he prefers with his team, which is we don't have a superstar quarterback, so everyone has to elevate their game, particularly their defense. I think that's the bigger storyline. The quarterback battle takes up all the oxygen, but what is Alabama going to do under Steele to get back to their winning ways and to get back to opponents being scared of them when their defense takes the field? Because that clearly wasn't the case last year, LSU and Tennessee just getting whatever they wanted in crunch time to beat the Tide.
And Alabama and Georgia, we just talked about, two of the four teams with win totals of 10.5 or higher. The other two, Ohio State and Michigan, and that transitions us, Michael, into the Big Ten, where Penn State was a 10-win team last season. It's now going to be the second year. Manny Diaz there as defensive coordinator, third season for Mike Yurcich as the OC there under James Franklin. What do you expect now after replacing a guy who in Sean Clifford seemingly was at Penn State for like a decade and a half at quarterback? What do you expect of the Nittany Lions now in 2023 with that 9.5 win total?
I'm thrilled that it's staying at 9.5. I don't mind laying the juice to go over that because they return so much on defense. When you look at their, you know, starting lineup on that side of the ball, it's almost all juniors and seniors. Their offensive line has the potential to be elite, three seniors, a potential top 10 pick at left tackle. And then the running game, those two backs are home run hitters. So you fold in Drew Aller, the number one quarterback in the 2022 class per 24/7. I really like their receiving corps. They go out to get Dante Cephas from the portal. When Cephas had quality quarterback play in 2021 at Kent State, he went for 82 receptions, 1,200 yards, 9 TDs. I think that they have enough to get over the hump in the Big Ten East, but I think this is the better bet to make. Because really, they only need one win in these three pivotal games. They host Iowa on September 23rd. They go to Columbus to take on Ohio State on October 21st. And they host Michigan on November 11th. I think that if they get any wins there, they finish the season at least 10-2. And I think this is probably, you know, holistically, top to bottom, Franklin's best roster.
All right, let's talk about the overhyped team of all time, the Texas Longhorns. Everybody, you know, they got the greatest coach in college football. They got, you know, Arch Manning, who's not going to be the starter. Is it Quinn Ewers going to be the starter? So what do you think? Their win total's at 9.5. Where do you think this is going to go?
I think just because of the public and the hype train that you're going to end up having to, you know, you're going to end up seeing this number probably move to 10 or get juiced at 9.5. It's a stay away from me because the Texas Longhorns, to me, with all of that talent, they still weren't able to put it together. And I still had issues with Sarkisian as a head coach in terms of kind of righting the ship and being that calming influence. He saw it at USC, at Washington to a certain degree. Is he somebody who can take this program to the elite level? And they're losing Bijan Robinson, who is a generational running back. So the fact that they couldn't get over the hump last year, even though they played a great game against Alabama, I still have my doubts as to where they are right now as a program. And an underrated storyline, the Big 12 is going to be easily the most enjoyable conference from a chaos perspective on a week-to-week basis. You have new teams coming in that are absolutely hungry to deliver some upsets. And then just the overall depth, I think, is incredible for the conference. So it's no cakewalk for Texas, who's going to get everyone's best swing on their last year in the Big 12.
Yeah, Texas, eight wins last year, and now they're up to 9.5. TCU's not even on the list we just flashed, guys.
I
mean,
I love it.
I mean, everybody's going to say, oh, that was just a one-year wonder for TCU.
And then they're going to go to the Southeast Conference. Like, they're going to be able to go over there. Are they tough enough to go in the Southeast? I don't think so.
We shall see. Michael Calabrese, again, give him a follow at East Breeze. Michael,
Great job, really appreciate
the insights. I know we're going to have a lot more of them from you throughout the rest of the off-season stretch here for college football. So great stuff as always.
Thanks,
appreciate
Michael.
It, guys. I'll leave you with one quick one. Take a flyer on Duke, 37-1 to win the ACC.
Ooh,
I think that's a great number.
So
wow.
Couch change on the Blue Devils.
Duke, 6.5 right now as well. You can even get plus money on that over a plus 110. We love a good long shot from Michael Calabrese, so thanks to him for that. When we come back, we'll continue some of the college football conversation because a former, one of the great all-time Colorado Buffaloes, Mike Pritchard, he joins us next here on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today and get a daily email recapping all the best bets from our show hosts and guests. You'll also get unlimited access to our VSiN.com/picks page. Sort picks by sport, matchup, event date, and more. Check the top VSiN experts leaderboard to view betting records, profit, and ROI, and see which VSiN expert has the hot hand for VSiN Pro picks, betting splits, power ratings, plus 24/7 video access. Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today. Sign up now for only $9.99 at VSiN.com/subscribe. Ben in for Stormy today from the Circus Sportsbook Studios here in Las Vegas. Michael Lombardi with us from the East Coast, and a guy who, during the football season, Michael, I had the distinct pleasure. He got to sit right next to me. It was every Tuesday during the fall. Mike Pritchard. He joins us right now as he does every single Monday. Good Pritch, good to see you, man. We were talking last Monday just some of your immediate draft reaction thoughts. Now in the week that has passed, your alma mater, Colorado, has basically been the talk of the football world for good or bad. I don't really know how to categorize it. What's your read on what's going on there at the old alma mater with Coach Prime and the Buffs? Win total now down to 3.
Yeah, I'm going to take a page from Aaron Rodgers and tell everybody to relax. Just relax. I mean – I get it. You know, Deion Sanders can attract attention, and we know that. And certainly the University of Colorado, the football program, needed attention, and they got in a big way. Now, the other side of that is the fallout, right? The transfer portal and all this news about the transfer portal. I'll sum it up this way. You know, the Buffs did not have a great year. They have not had a great decade. They have not been relevant in a long while. So I think there's so many layers to this other than the headlines. Like, the transfer portal works both ways, right? I mean, there's a lot of players that wanted to get out of the program, and certainly they want to look for another opportunity, which the transfer portal now gives them that opportunity. They don't have to sit out a year. But then on the other side, if you're a coach like Coach Prime, who only has 5 years from a contract standpoint to turn around a program, you want some of those players to enter the portal, right? So I think there's a lot of that going on because of the type of players that Coach Prime and the staff are bringing in. You know, those are the players that they want to work with. I mean, free agency in college football is running rampant. You know, there's constant recruiting. Some of these guys are enticed by the NIL and other opportunities, and that's why they're leaving. But I think a lot, the bulk of the players leaving is because Coach Prime and his staff, they want those four-star and five-star recruits to enter the program at CU. Because I think that gets easier, right? So if you are trying to recruit and you had the backdrop of CU football for so long, it's hard to attract four and five-star athletes. That's the hard work. The easy work as a staff collectively is to coach four and five-star athletes. And I think that's what Coach Prime's trying to do.
Well, I mean, Mike, he's got 17 guys listed in his starting lineup that have transferred. The good part about that is that they can't transfer again. So he's got them, right? Now, some of them are grad transfers. Some of them are, you know, sophomores. But I think, to me, what I would be a little concerned about is the guys are leaving that they recruited this winter, you know, and now he's getting some of those guys to leave. So I agree. This transfer portal, it's going to be challenging. It's going to be challenging. I mean, defensively, they have one player returning from their defense, which I think is going to be hard. And I think the one thing, it's going to take some time, and we're going to have to be patient as this thing kind of takes some development. It's one thing to turn over the roster, but there's another, you got to develop the roster too.
Yeah. And great point. I mean, I think you would rather develop it with four and five star recruits if you can. And I think that's what they're trying to attract. And just from a historical standpoint, when Coach McCartney got to CU, you know, in 84, 2 years into his tenure, they won one game. But it took 3 years after that to turn over the roster to where it was competitive within the Big Eight. As a head coach today, you don't have 3 years. Coach Prime, his contract's only 5 years. And like I mentioned, the last decade has not been kind to the University of Colorado in the football program. So I think he's trying to get there in a hurry. I'm optimistic that they can win over three games, though, this year.
You know what I think they should do, Pritch? September 9th. Battle, the home opener against Nebraska, formerly an amazing, one of the best college football rivalries in the country. Yeah. Let's get Pritch on the sidelines for that. That was what, a 2-3 matchup in 89 when you guys beat Nebraska by 6, I think?
Yeah. I think, we'll put it this way, they're going to have a hard time keeping me off the sideline.
Let's go.
Let's be at that one. That's a long time coming because the game's back on campus. It's been a while. You know, before that game, his in-state rival too, CSU. So it's not an easy schedule. You know, Matt Rhule supposedly is doing a great job with the football program out there in Lincoln. I think everybody associated with the University of Colorado is going to be on the side or be close to the game, if possible, as close as we can get to that game in that field.
I guess we're setting the odds, Michael, at, you know, like minus 5,000 that Pritch is going to be. He'll be there.
He should be there. That's the great thing about being an alumni of a school and a first-round pick from the school. You need those guys. I mean, look, that represents – because I think that what Pritch said to start this conversation, I don't think people remember how great Colorado football once was when he was there and Cordell Stewart and – Michael Westbrook and Bieniemy. I mean, there was a lot of talent on that roster. Chad Brown. I mean, it was unbelievable. So I think we've lost sight of that. Now they're in the Pac-12. You know, they once were in the Southwest Conference, I think they called it at the time. So, you know, there's a lot for Deion to restore. But once you get it going, that could be a great place. Look, we know this, you know, when Bill Snyder went to Kansas State, it took him a long time to get it turned around too.
Yep, no doubt. We're gonna mark that down. Pritch sideline September 9th. Buffs Huskers. Well, I cannot wait. I'm penciling that in on the calendar. As far as the NFL stuff going on right now, Pritch. So we talked last Monday. You're really high in what one of your former teams you played for in the NFL did in the Seattle Seahawks with their draft haul. Michael and I just did the exercise looking at the teams who made the postseason last year. Seattle was one of them. But the teams who are now favored to miss the playoffs. There's four of them. Three are very close and only barely favored to miss the playoffs this season. So between the New York Giants, Minnesota Vikings, and then the LA Chargers, if we go to the AFC, of those three, which team do you find yourself, Mike, maybe not so sure of their ability to get back to the postseason and buying their opportunity to get back there for this 2023 campaign?
I mean, Ben, you're going to tee it up, and I'm going to drive it right down the middle here. It's the LA Chargers, right? I mean, the Chargers have been highly inconsistent. You have a once-in-a-lifetime type of quarterback, I think, and Justin Herbert. He's going on his third offensive coordinator, as if that's been the problem. I mean, he's thrown for over 5,000 yards, right? And, you know, you look around him, and some of the parts are aging, and some of the parts are injured, and they're replacing guys. But Kellen Moore, too, a new offensive coordinator, like I mentioned. But the problem has been defense, right? And Staley. And scoring defense in particular, because they've been in the 20s, the mid-20s, or high 20s since he's been there. And now that side of the ball is aging and often injured too. So I think over history, the Chargers have told us that they've been inconsistent as a franchise. And now it's like they're looking the other way to the problem. And I don't see how they build upon the situation. They get the extra game at home because they're the AFC, but the home field advantage is out the window when it comes to that franchise too. So I don't see the Chargers, backing it up and making the playoffs again this year.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I agree, Mike. I think everybody, you know, we all love Justin Herbert. He's talented, but at some point, football is a game of toughness. Stop the run, run the ball, physicality. And I don't know if the Chargers have that or if their roster has that on it. You know, the other team we talked about were the Giants. I mean, it's hard to go from good to great in the NFL. Everybody just thinks the Giants won 9 games. They're going to be right back in it. They were, when you look at the good teams in the league, San Francisco, Philadelphia, Dallas, there's a gap when you go to the Giants in the next level.
Yeah, you know, in Daboll, do you trust too, right? Because he captured that locker room and it was remarkable. They were a surprise team like Seattle last year. And there's very few surprises each and every year. The constants are the teams that routinely go to the playoffs and certainly they draft well or restock players. But, you know, it's going to be interesting with the Giants. I think Hyatt from a draft choice, their draft, I believe, is sneaky good. But it's the continued development, though, with Daboll and a little bit, but then also getting the consistency that we've seen from the elite teams out there.
Yeah, he is Mike Pritchard joining us on the Lombardi line and just looking at some of the win totals right now as far as comparing the playoff odds. Chargers 9.5 evenly juiced on that side this year. Giants at 8.5 juiced to the under there at -140. What do you remember, Pritch, about? So it was your second year, right? Falcons make the playoffs, not expected to be any good, but your rookie season, you kind of come out of nowhere, make the postseason. So what is that like in the locker room? And when you completely shift expectations going from unheralded to now all of a sudden expected to make a return trip.
Right. Yeah. The surprise team, which we were that my rookie year, and then we tried to back that up, but it all goes to discipline and we had zero. I mean, the off seasons, everybody's making commercials, everybody's trying to get fat and happy. And we had the limelight and we certainly didn't have the structure to remain disciplined. And then we also didn't have the players. I mean, they traded away the future. You know, Herrock and Glanville didn't see eye to eye, and they traded away Brett Favre that offseason. It's like, okay, wait a minute. We went to the playoffs, and you're supposed to upgrade positions, right? And Brett Favre would have been an upgrade over the quarterback that we had that year.
I've been told, Michael, that Atlanta may or may not have been a fun place to live as a young NFL player back in the early 90s.
Yeah.
I've heard.
Yeah, no doubt about that.
Heard it or two. Pritch, great to see you as always. You did drive it right down the middle after I set you up. I hope that means we're getting some golf in soon. So
absolutely.
Thanks to Pritch for joining us. We'll wrap up the Lombardi line right after this here on VSiN.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
BetMGM, the king of sportsbooks, unleashes the spirit of Las Vegas with BetMGM Rewards. Every time you make a wager at BetMGM, you can earn BetMGM Rewards points that you can redeem for online bonus credits like bonus bets and bet insurance tokens. Planning a trip to Vegas? You can also convert your BetMGM points into MGM Rewards points that you can use towards dining, shows, and hotel rooms at over 20 MGM Resorts properties located on the Las Vegas Strip and nationwide. Sign up with BetMGM or log on today to get an even bigger piece of the action with BetMGM Rewards. Eligibility restrictions apply. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly and offer resources to help you make appropriate choices. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. Must be 21 years of age or older to wager. New and existing customer offer. All promotions are subject to qualification and eligibility requirements. Rewards issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets. Bonus bets expire in 7 days from issuance. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Been a blast filling in for Stormy Bond and Tony today. Ben Wilson back with you from Circa. And a big thanks to our producer, Elliot Bowman. Nick, Sean, Sergio, Troy, everybody else here in our house, keeping us on the air and looking as good as we possibly can. I'm Michael Lombardi from the East Coast. I'm just sad we couldn't do a show together in studio, Michael, because you were here.
I was there. And you were traveling the country. I was there for almost 2 months. I was out there. It was nice. I got to see all the guys and got to experience a lot of good shows out there with Stormy and, of course, my man, the defense attorney, Femi, who would probably be right in line with this MVP stuff for Justin Fields. I'm sure he's got a ticket in his pocket. He's got that, too. He represents him. He's got a lot of clients, Femi does. He's Femi representing a lot of these guys.
Femi knows. I was on the air right after him yesterday on Live Bet Sunday yesterday over at South Point. He confirmed that to me. He knows people. He's got his sources. That leads into our pro tip for our show today. And it's a good reminder, especially from the betting perspective. We're in this offseason stretch where like people are looking for content, and you will see these teams and players not necessarily leak information, but you'll get the reports coming out of team A or player B. And it's if a team slash player is accordingly to those reports light years ahead of where they were a season ago, make sure you're just taking that with a grain of salt. Don't all of a sudden look at the market and say, well, this number is way, way off. If you're believing that report, I'm just going to blindly bet it. It is best to show some restraint at this time of year, and that's one of those things, Michael, I know gets you going every time this time of year.
I mean, I think to me, you got to balance it, right? Like, have you ever heard a report about somebody, you know, not having a good minicamp? I mean, you don't hear anything, right? So, like, I'm surprised we haven't heard Sam Howell's light years ahead of everywhere, you know? I mean, I'm surprised we haven't heard that. But, you know, look, I think take it with a grain of salt. You know, you're going to see him when we get to preseason. We're going to watch some of the practice. Again, even when, you know, what can we learn from the Jokic bench thing?
Yeah.
Even when people see something, they don't see it, right? Like, there's nothing there to see, and yet we have a narrative. So when people report at practice this summer, they don't even know what they're seeing. You know, they don't even understand. So you can't even take that in. Like, it comes down to the preseason games. It comes down to the games. We know this, that football will be different on the opening weekend than it was at any other point. And the game is going to move really fast. And you've got to condition your mind for that. And it's hard. It's really going to be hard. It's going to be hard for Jordan Love early in the season as he kind of finds his way and learns, okay, here's how they're playing me. Here's what they're trying to do to me. And I think once you get through that, then you got to figure out how to handle it.
Again, check all of those daily betting tips we have on our website, vsin.com. And as you're talking about quarterbacks, you know, Michael, we haven't talked and been on the air together since the draft. And the thing I keep thinking about, you have this record-setting draft as far as number of quarterbacks taken, 13, 10 of whom were outside day one. And you just wonder, you talk about a guy like a Jordan Love coming in and getting that development. We saw last year quarterbacks who were young, unheralded, like a Bailey Zappe, and then Brock Purdy, the best example of that, leading his team into the postseason. Are we seeing a shift now where teams are valuing just the flyer element of taking quarterbacks with more college experience and at least having them on the roster in case something happens here in midseason?
No, I think there's a conscious effort, and should be, to develop quarterbacks because we can't find them. And so I think that's what's happened. It's one thing. It's a little bit like, you know, Robert Salai says, we're not listening to Aaron Rodgers and you sign Randall Cobb. Like, how does he get on the field for you, Robert? Like, how does he even play? He's not going to play special teams. You know, he's not going to – he's the fifth receiver at best. Okay, so you cut Corey Davis. We'll make him the fourth. He doesn't play in the kicking game. Who are you taking off the field to put him on there? You got to guarantee his salary for the beginning of the season. Like, it makes no sense to sign him unless Rodgers wants him. Then it makes all the sense in the world. It's the same thing with rookie – you sign some veteran guy that can't really – you sign Mike Glennon. Are you really – do you have a backup quarterback? Aren't you better off drafting someone? I mean, look, I'm excited for your Packers to watch the Sean Clifford era. You know, did I think he would get drafted? No, but even he got drafted.
Right.
So I think to me it's like we're trying to develop quarterbacks. I said this on the podcast today. Like Stetson Bennett, if you asked me what quarterback would Sean McVay fall in love with, I would have not said Stetson Bennett. I wouldn't have. You know, but he did. He drafted him in the fourth round. So they needed a backup. He's the backup. And if you're the backup to Matthew Stafford, there's a good damn chance you're going to play.
Yeah, you're right. Oh, and that's a guy, like, the draft props are on Bennett would even get drafted. And it was only a slight minus money proposition that he would. And it was assumed seventh round, but he goes fourth round. You get a guy like Sean Clifford. Most people, if you ask the scouts, did not have a draft grade on him, but he was a fifth round selection to the Green Bay Packers. I just want to go, too, as we wrap the show, just some quick fire latest news and notes around the NFL thoughts, yeah. Michael, because you mentioned the Robert Saleh piece as head coach of the New York Jets, and there's been the endless offseason storylines headlined by the quarterback now coming in Aaron Rodgers. But yeah, that offensive line, it's so fascinating. They kind of get played by Bill Belichick, the Pittsburgh Steelers. As the Patriots trade down, Steelers come up, they jump right in front of the Jets, take the last first-round graded offensive lineman right in front of New York, who made it clear they wanted an offensive tackle in that spot. Then you get over the weekend the tweet, Mekhi Becton saying, I am a left tackle. Let me basically saying, I got that should be my position. And head coach Robert Saleh over the weekend on Saturday said, hey, man, you go out and earn your spot. We think there's going to be some good competition. So interesting to see some of those controversies, if you want to call it that, brewing already with maybe some discontent on the O-line there.
Well, let me say this about Becton. When he's playing and he's in shape, now those are two big ifs, and his mind is on the game, he's a dominant left tackle in the run game. I mean, one of the things you want to be able to do in pro football is have a left tackle that can run block, because most of the time the right ends on that side are undersized. They're undersized. They're playing a guy that can rush the passer. They want to get up the field. But when you can have a dominant run blocker, somebody when Trent Brown at the Patriots is really humming and he's playing left tackle and he's in shape and he's into it, it's really good. I mean, Becton could be the answer for him. Now, does he love football enough? I don't know. Is he willing to work hard enough? I don't know. Those are things that have kept this kid's career from taking the next step. Talent isn't the issue here. It's desire. It's competitiveness. Mm-hmm. If they can get that out of him, you know, he's much better than Dwayne Brown could ever be. But Dwayne Brown knows what to do. They can count on him. And I think that's where it comes down to. But Becton, let's make no mistake about Becton. Becton has skill. He just doesn't have the desire or the innate competitiveness to really want to take over a game.
Right. Well, and let's just say, for the sake of argument, Becton is healthy, is able to win the left tackle spot. You rule out any other injury, just, again, for the sake of argument here, and you think about how that impacts protection for a quarterback like Aaron Rodgers. What do you see the ceiling as far as protection-wise, Michael, for this Jets O-line if they're all healthy?
Well, I think to me it's going to be a little nebulous, right? Now, one thing about Rodgers is he knows how to get rid of football, right? And he's quick to make decisions. So I don't think it'll affect the Jets offense. Remember, Rodgers is very good at protecting the football. He's not going to throw – he's so hard to fool with the defensive coordinator. I mean, he's really good at the line of scrimmage. So, and he'll get rid of the ball as quickly as he can. You can't fool him. So I think he'll overcome that. Who's going to be the right tackle? You know, Mitchell last year, the fourth-round pick, I think he was the right – are they going to play him there? You know, Becton wants to play left tackle. Brown's never played right tackle. So I think there's a lot of question marks as you go into this. The new center, Tipman, I mean, is he going to start for them? I mean, that's going to be interesting. Now, they've got to get – if they get that going, that they really don't have anything that they should prevent them from being a very good football team.
And you say the word nebulous as well, and there have been all the, you know, the Rodgers situations where he's brought in his guys, even though the Jets have said, yeah, we're making our decisions. We're not listening to him necessarily. And Billy Turner's another guy, former Packer offensive lineman with Rodgers, goes to Denver, hurt most of last year, with playing for Nathaniel Hackett, who's now there in New York as that offensive coordinator. How do you see Turner being a factor at all? Can he get back to form he was in a couple of years ago?
You know, I think that remains to be seen. And, you know, if he can, he'll be the right tackle. You know, that's a little slip him in at right tackle. He's kind of had an up-and-down career. When he was in Denver, you know, originally he wasn't, you know, and then he went to Green Bay, and then he comes back to Denver. You know, try to play him at guard. He plays better at tackle. So it's going to be interesting to see if he can. But he knows what to do. And with Rodgers on the field, knowing what to do is huge, right? The trust. That's why Randall Cobb's there. He knows what to do. We trust him. So this whole notion, Salai, saying we're not listening to Rodgers is really just a crock because you know they are, and they should.
We know that what's going on there. 9.5 is the win total. Jets -160 favorites now to make the playoffs. A lot more NFL discussion for us coming up later this week. Michael, as always, great being back with you.
Thanks, Ben. Great to see you again. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. All right. Hey, enjoy that that Sixers game 5 on Tuesday as we wrap up here on the Lombardi Line.